Hi, everybody. My name is Earl. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
I thought this was going to be like, you know, the little spillover thing, you know, like a few wayward souls. We just kind of hang out and have a little chat and go over to the dance. First, I guess I want to thank the committee for asking me to come share at the conference. It's always an honor and a privilege. I want to thank Don for the communications along the way, make sure I get here on time and in the right place. And I got a lot of friends in the room, oddly enough. It's nice to see some old friends. You know, Robert's sitting over there, my new friend Kathy's sitting right over here, Kimo's sitting over there, my girlfriend Lori is sitting right here, Debbie's over here, one of my heroes, John, sitting right there. A friend of mine from the Hawaiian Islands is over there somewhere. Where are you, man? I just saw you. So there you are. Yeah, good. And I didn't have any friends when I got here. Didn't have any heroes either. I was completely alone in the world. I had no friends. I had no family. I had no place to live. I was unemployable. I could not distinguish between fantasy and reality. I had seen a lot of death, a lot of blood spilled. I had over 600 stitches in me. I'd broken 74 bones. I was psychotic. I was 215 pounds. I had hair out like this, a beard out like this. I was psychotic, and I don't use the term loosely. My life was insane. I burned my life to the ground. And I was, by the end, I was willing to go through all of that if I could just have another drink. That's it. That's alcoholism for me. I drank for the effect produced by alcohol. I didn't start drinking until I was 12 years old. I had been restless, irritable, and discontented for a long time prior to that. But 12 was the first time somebody said, "Would you like a drink?" There's CT sitting over there. It's good to see you. Somebody said, "Would you like a drink?" And I said, "Well, yeah, you know." And we smoked a joint, and I didn't know why we were smoking a joint. I didn't even know what that was. You know, he lit it and took a hit and handed it to me, and I just did what he did. You know, I was trying to make friends. I'd been shipped off to boarding school. My family knew me better than anybody in the world, and they'd just thrown me away, and I didn't know why. They'd shipped me off to school, and I was the youngest of 250 boys in a boarding school, and I had a high IQ, and I don't have it anymore, so I'm not bragging. We pretty much annihilated that by the time I was 16. I'd just been beat up by the biggest guy in the school. I mean, my world was not working out, you know. 12 years old, and the guy came by, but I had attacked the largest guy in the school, so the cool guys had come around and said, you know, "Hey, you want to hook up?" You know, and the way they said you want to hook up is you want to smoke a joint. I mean, we were the children of the 60s, right? We were focused on the drugs. Our parents were alcoholics, you see, and we were carving out our own identity. We weren't going to drink ourselves to death like they did. We were going to kill ourselves in a whole new way. We were going to focus on these drugs, right? And the fact, and I'll get to that later. I mean, that's, you know, how absolutely ridiculous that idea is. And, I smoked a joint and drank a little red wine with these two complete total strangers, Matt and Steve. Those are the guys' names. I'll never forget them, man. I'd say their whole names, but there's a slim chance one of them may still be alive, so I don't want to. You never know, right? Odds are against it with those guys. And we smoked a joint, drank the red wine, and I was standing there looking at these two total strangers. I don't know why I'm doing this. I don't know why we're doing this. And it happened. You know, that thing that makes me bodily different from my fellows occurred. And this warm feeling came up over me, and I was introduced to the effect produced by alcohol put into my body. What happens when you put alcohol in me? When you put a little weed in me? I mean, suddenly I was comfortable standing where I was standing, doing what I was doing with the people I was doing it with. Never felt that way before. Ever. This is heaven, man. And what I noticed was that I did this, we caught the buzz, we chatted things over, and I don't know, is it the pot, is it the wine, is it the fact that I'm here with my closest personal friends, Matt and Steve, because I'm feeling very connected. I don't know. I don't know if that's if what it is. All I know is it's the best feeling I've ever had. And this. Nobody died. Nobody went to jail. I didn't take a hit off the joint, take a pull on the wine, look at these two guys and say, I'd love to talk, but I have to go downtown and get a great deal of heroin right now. It didn't happen like that. You know what I mean? All the things they told me were going to happen didn't. We talked it over. Who knows what we were talking about, and who cares? We were happy. We talked it over, went our separate ways. I went back to my little dorm room, got some sleep, got up the next morning. I was fine. And I thought, greatest feeling ever, no downside. I must do this as often as I possibly can. Made perfect sense to me. And I got to remember that that's how it started. Now, slowly over a period of 16 years, the natural progression for me was that at the very end, in the beginning, I got the best feeling I'd ever had in my life. I paid no price for it. In the end, I was paying with my very life, my sanity, everything that I had ever held dear. I was willing to sacrifice all of it for just one more drink, trying to get well. Not feel great, not have that sense of euphoria, just get well, because I was so sick and I was dying of alcoholism. That's where I got to. Everything switched over and it became the opposite of what I experienced in the beginning. I mean, 12 drank a little pot, a little wine. 13 was pills, any kind of pills. And the only reason I took a pill is because somebody would, you know, would you like a pill? Well, yeah, I'll have a pill. You know, what could that do? Well, 20 minutes later, I'm laying on the floor, and I'm very, very happy down there. You know? And all I want to know is, what do you call that? That's what I want to know. I'm very fond of whatever that is. You know, 14 was psychedelics. The only reason I took a psychedelic was somebody said, would you like a drop of a little acid? And I said, well, yeah. No idea what that means, but, you know, it's all right. So Hannah gave it to me, and I took it and put it in my mouth, and she said, did you take that whole thing? And I said, well, yeah, it was very tiny. It was a very tiny pill. I was just these horse caps, you know? And she said, that's three hits of white lightning. Yeah, yeah. That was like the wave of identification that went across the room when I said that. It was like, oh, yeah. That's what that was. And, well, needless to say, the next 2 days were very, very strange for me. You know, I was kind of in and out of consciousness. 15, I started shooting dope. The only reason I did that was I was at a party, and this girl said, would you like me to stick this in your body? And I said, well, yeah. It all, you know, I mean, when you ease up on these things, they all seem reasonable. Would you like me to inject, you know, a potentially lethal substance into your body? You bet. I'm down for that. You know, and she slammed me, and I just did one of those, ugh. You know, just wham, right over. And all I remember thinking on the way down was, oh, yeah. That's a beauty, that one. That worked. I love that one. It was just the greatest because it was just instant. The world was presenting to me in these series of events all of these ways to just erase how I felt, to take away all my self-centered fear, all the pain, all my insecurity, all my doubt, you know, all my suspicions that you guys all knew something that I didn't know. I mean, all that just went away. All that me comparing my insides to your outsides every time I walked into a room and losing every time, all that went away. And there were just so many different ways to make it go away. It was like colors in a paint box for me. And I would wake up every morning and I would open my paint box and go, what shall we paint today? You know? Now, I'm a down and out kind of guy. This is what I love. I love to go down. That's given the choice, may we please go down. I want alcohol, barbiturates, heroin. I want my idea of a perfect evening is just sitting at home, checking my pulse. You know? How are we doing? You know, just that just that quiet, dark, heart and lungs working only place. That's my place. That's the place I love. Because nothing ever goes wrong there. Nothing. The only thing that goes wrong there is occasionally you kind of come out of the fog and they're loading you into an ambulance again. You know, we're going to go pump her old stomach and, well, you know, that's just the way that goes. That's acceptable. I mean, and that was, and I'm talking, I got up and I said, my name's Earl, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm talking about all these drugs. And the reason for that is, like I said, you know, child of the 60s, right? We were focused on the drugs. Parents were the alcoholics. We're drug addicts. There's the line right there. We're different. It's very hip. We're up on the edge. We're very cool. We're dark. We're deep. We're mysterious. You know? What we were was we were idiots. That's what we were. Just a bunch of loose cannons running around thinking we discovered something, invented something. Not a chance, man. This had all been done for eons before we ever got to it. But we thought we were rather special. Because we did it with bell bottoms and long hair. And, you know, as far as we could tell, nobody had done that for several hundred years. We were, you know, reasonably, you know, original. And, but I'll tell you what, having done, that's the romantic side of it as we were coming up through our lives. Having gotten sober, survived the madness of that life, and done my inventory work and looked back on it, I gotta tell you, the truth's a little different. And the truth is this, the drugs would come and go. Like I said, I'm a down and out guy. This is what I prefer. But if I go to Connect and you don't have any heroin, you don't have any Dilaudid, you don't have any Quaaludes, you don't have any barbiturates for me, you'd say, well, we have a great deal of cocaine. I'll say, well, I would very much like a great deal of that then. Can't go down? No dark, quiet place? Let's go up. We'll go up then. We'll go up as fast as we possibly can. I'm perfectly cool with the idea of sitting around all night listening to the air around my head now. I'll do that. I'll jack it right through the roof. I'll go on window patrol. I'm cool with it. Let's go, man. You know? Driving down the freeway, decoding license plates, you know? Yeah. No problem. Let's go right now. And I was happy to do that because, see, the fact of the matter is, it's not necessarily about going down because I'm so willing to go up. I don't care because the point is I got to get out of right here right now. I got to get out of right here right now. All right? And this is what separates the men from the boys is if you accept that, I got to realize that the drugs were coming and going. I didn't care what was hitting the table. I was getting as much of that as I could in my body. There was only one thing that was on the table every single day. And that was booze. There was always a fifth of something sitting on that table. And I'll tell you why that's true for me. Drugs are unreliable. They're unreliable. There is no quality control going on out there. You don't know what you got till you get it in your body. Right? You don't know. And when was the last time you went to Connect for your cocaine and you said, yeah, I'll take an eight. And the guy says, you know, Earl, it's not that good this week. You know, my standards are such that I don't feel comfortable giving this to you. I'd like you to come back next week. Maybe we'll have something a little better for you. I don't know about you, but that never happened to me. Always the best, always the greatest. You may have to step on this again before you get busy, right? And it's bunk, right? You never knew till you got it in your body. This is when you knew what you had. I don't care if it's heroin, cocaine, whatever. You get it, you cook it up, you hit it, now you know, right? You go get yourself a fifth of Jack Daniels, you go get yourself a quart of good gin, you know what you got before you crack the seal. You know what you got. This is reliable stuff. So that if you get some, you get a little, overshoot the mark with the cocaine, you know, at 7:30 the party's just starting and you can't get your mouth open anymore, because you just, you have locked down, right? Don't worry about it, man. You just suck a little gin through your teeth. You'll loosen right up and you can go on with the party. You know, not enough heroin to get you to that cool, quiet, dark place that you long for, right? You can't get all the way. Don't worry. Quart of gin will get you the rest of the way. It'll get you there. After a little too spooky this evening, don't worry about it. Jack will get you back in the comfort zone. Get some whiskey in you. You'll be all right. So this is why, I mean, booze is, was always for me the best friend, the one that I could count on. And it was important, you know. When you're living that life, you got to have something you can depend on. And for me, it was alcohol. It was not other people. It was not a career. It was not any other hopes or dreams or aspirations. The thing that I knew was that there's a fifth sitting on the table right there. I can get busy. I can do whatever else I got to do, because sitting right there is the thing that will get it done. That will get it done. Keep me where I got to be. Right? And in the end, for me, it was just 3-4 grams of coke a day, just to keep me on my, and it was, which was secondary. This was strictly medicinal. That was to keep me on my feet so that I could drink the way I needed to drink. What I needed to do was drink. And when I get so sick I couldn't drink anymore, I'd eat about 150 milligrams of Valium a day just to get well enough to go back to drinking. It did not occur to me that we should get sober. That sobriety was a good idea, because I knew it was not. I knew what happened when I got sober. Things got really squirrely, fast. Because where I got left with sober was me. The big problem. Me. What I got left with was all those feelings, all those thoughts, all those fears, all those apprehensions, all of those things that I had been able to drown out of my consciousness. All of those things were remarkably patient. And I would get sober, and there they were. This has been waiting for you, Earl. Now that you're back, we got a few things we want to talk about. Number one, you're a complete and total loser. Number two, you will always be a complete and total loser. And it was just boom, 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 boom. And it was just, you know, I'd just start taking the beating that came from within. And I would medicate that. But here we go again. Couldn't stay sober. Couldn't stay sober a whole day. It's impossible. And pointless. I mean, as far as I could tell, there was really no point. I mean, and I'm like 15. You know? It's like, I love it, right? Just paint this horrific story. And then I turned 16. Yeah, he's going to do well in life. Are you serious? 16, I dropped out of high school. My father came back in my life, said, "You've obviously lost your mind," and threw me in a mental institution. And I was for 3 months of observation, a year of rehabilitation. I thought this was very excessive. And I had my first escape attempt. And that's, they have the signs here. They're red here, but they were green in the place I was in. The exit signs that are lit up. And I used to sit in this cafeteria every day and look at those signs and go, "That's it, that's it. One word. We've got it down to one word. That's all I want to do. Exit. I don't like this place." I mean, they're threatening me with shock treatment, and they're doing all this. You know, they're bringing out the little triangle rubber thing and going, "This is what goes in your mouth." Thinking, you know, I don't like you people. I want to go back out there. You know what I mean? I take 3 cups of pills a day in here, and I shuffle around in this joint, and you ask me how I feel, and I say, "Fine." And, you know, it's useless. This is pointless, you know? You light my cigarettes for me, you shuffle around, I don't have my own belt. You know what I mean? No shoelaces, you know, you got the room with no doorknobs, you know, all that. And I used to have all my meals with this girl named Kilday, who was nuts. But very entertaining, because all you had to do to Kilday when you would eat is you would sit down with Kilday and you would say, "Hey, Kilday, how you doing?" And she'd do just what you did. And Kilday would just go, "Ha!" And she'd just snap and go screaming across the room, and all the guys would come and subdue Kilday, you know. So I used Kilday as, every meal was like dinner and a show, you know what I mean? You eat your little food and Kilday flip out and go. So I used Kilday as my diversion, you know, when I was going to escape. And I got Kilday going and just spun her off in that direction. I'm sitting in my little chair and I'm thinking, I'm going to make my big break. Ready, 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 go! And I'm hauling ass. And in your head, you're thinking, what's going on? Because, you know, you just made your move and it wasn't there. Because you don't know about the 3 little cups of pills, you know what I mean? Get your brains working fine, but then you go for the move and it ain't there. You know, you got still and slow. But you still keep going, and over the nurses, over the loudspeaker from the nurses' station, you hear, Ed, when you got a minute, you want to grab Earl? He's making a break for the door. Yeah. And Ed's over there going, having a sandwich, going, yeah, yeah, I'll get him in a minute, yeah. He ain't going nowhere. And you think, tools for living. I'm like 16 years old. I'm a high school dropout. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a drug addict. I'm at any moment, hopefully, an escaped mental patient. This is my resume. This is what I have to say for myself. And I'm thinking, if I can get out of here, I don't have a problem. Because I'll be drunk in 20 minutes. And that's all that matters. Because, see, what I do is I drink and use no matter what. Given a good reason, I don't stop. That's the difference between me and a problem drinker. Problem drinker, you give them a good reason to stop, they do. I know it's hard for us to believe, but that's what they do. It's really remarkable. You give them a drunk driving charge before the judge, problem drinker, stay on there. Judge says, you know, I'm sick of you. See you one more time, you're doing a year. We're not going to talk about it. No discussion. No plea. You're doing a year. Boom. 366 days later, we'll talk. Problem drinker hears this and thinks, I don't want to go to jail. Actually stops drinking and driving. Me, I start wondering what it's going to be like in jail because I'm going. I'm going to jail. I don't stop. And I don't stop. And that's the beauty, the pure nature of alcoholism. That's why I have such respect for the little bastard. Because it's so pure in what it does. It doesn't care about anything. It just does its thing. And you can put whatever you want on it. It lends itself to the very nature of people like me. That I can sit there. I wake up for years. I woke up every morning and thought to myself, do I stay sober today? Do I drink? Well, we'll have a drink. Now, built into that is me thinking I'm making a decision. The disease is couldn't be happier with that. Earl, go right ahead, take all the credit you need. Pretty this up any way you want to. You feel to need that there's some sort of a decision-making process involved here, you go right ahead. You tie it up in a bow, make it however you need it to be. But we will be drinking today. That's how the disease deals with me. When they say cunning, baffling, and powerful man, those aren't just words on a page. That's based on tons and tons of human suffering that went on in people's lives when sat down and said, how would you describe it? Well, based on, you know, each of us individually here having decades of experience with the pain and suffering brought about by this disease, I think cunning, baffling, and powerful really, really kind of cover it. And I think it's just the tip of the iceberg. You got to know it to believe it. Those words just take on a whole new meaning. They have a life of their own. That it's cunning, it's baffling, and it's powerful. Who gets baffled by it is me. Who suffers at the expense of the cunning is me. I'm not cunning, baffling, and powerful. It is. Because it doesn't care. It has no other agenda. It's not sorting anything out. It's just doing its thing. And I step up and hook up with that disease. It's going to do what it's got to do, which is rip me to shreds. No matter how smart I am, no matter how powerful I am, no matter how much of the juggernaut of self-will I may think I am, no matter how I can power through anything, I can stand up to anything. No. This thing's reduced me to a whimpering mass. I mean, I'd take on anybody, anywhere, anytime. I was just that frightened a human being. I'm not a tough guy or a bad guy. I never have been and never will be. But I'd take on anybody. I didn't care. You scared me, I attacked you. Hey, how do you think I get so many stitches and broken bones? I mean, you know, you just attack large numbers of huge people. You know, they beat you within an inch of your life and everybody goes home happy. So I spent 3 years out on the street. I escaped from the next mental institution. I got out of that one. They put me in another one. I escaped. I had new tools for living. Drugs, alcohol, violence, run. And you got to get out before they get the Thorazine in you. Because if you don't, you leave when they say. It's just that simple. You know, they take away second, third, and fourth gear. Just like that, man. You're not going anywhere. So I hit the road. Do what we do to stay loaded on a daily basis. Ended up in business college. It's a long story that makes no sense, so we don't even need to go there. I was in business college, studying marketing, production, distribution. Became a drug dealer, applying these things to my business. I'm making a ton of money. Making a ton of money as a drug dealer. The woman I'm living with has got a straight job. She's saying things to me occasionally like, I'm too high. Well, you have to go. So we just shipped her back to L.A. because that's ridiculous. We shipped her back to L.A. And using the way that I was using, I was starting to use pretty viciously at this point. I'm like 20 years old, and it's getting pretty crazy. And I get diagnosed to have malignant cancer. So they fly me back to L.A. They do major surgery on my back. They put me in the nuclear medicine program. They tell me I'm going to die. Prepare my family for me to die. And I just look at them thinking, you don't even know who you're talking to. You know, this could die. You know, that comes up like twice a week, the way I'm using it. You know what I mean? You're looking at these horrendous drug addicts, right? I mean, just pathetic human beings sitting across the table from you, and they're saying, you know, man, you need to settle down. You need to cool it a little bit. You're getting a little out of hand. And I'm looking at these people going, that guy is saying that to me? It's ridiculous. Because I was just, I mean, in here we keep track of time, right? Everybody's got track of time. This one's been sober 20 years. That one's been sober 4 months. That one's been sober 5.5 months, right? Out there, who keeps track? I remember when I finally was sitting in treatment, and this guy says to me, so well, let's talk over a few things, and starts to ask me when I got loaded and when did I take, and blah, 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 and we're just talking about it, and an hour and a half later he says, you know, you've been loaded on a daily basis for 16 years. I was shocked. I mean, you know, there's a guy over here going, yeah, me too, I was too. Yeah, because who's keeping track out there? I never woke up and went, you know, I've been loaded 17 days straight. You know, I took a day off. Yeah. I never had any idea. It was just because I was just having this drink. Just having a drink here. You know, you're all getting just excited about nothing. I'm just having a couple of cocktails. You know, and a bag of dope and, you know, two pills. And, you know, and we'll come to in a different city later, but that's later. Why do we have to worry about that now? I'm just having this drink. I wasn't going to keep track of anything. Right? And I'm up north now, and they're telling me that I could possibly die as a result of this behavior, this disease, this cancer. And I'm thinking, baloney. Not going to happen. Right? And they put me in the nuclear medicine. They're shooting me full of, you know, radioactive isotopes or whatever the hell they're shooting me full of. And I'm not liking the buzz off of this stuff at all. So I say, you know what? I ain't coming here anymore. And I go home and I get loaded the way I get loaded, which was viciously at that point. And I beat the cancer thing. I beat the thing. I mean, it's been, what, 26 years since I was diagnosed with malignant cancer. And basically, I think what happened was is that the way I was using in those days was so severe, cancer could not live in my body. I had become entirely too toxic. But it's a testimony to the human body. I mean, what you can do to yourself and still wake up the next day. I mean, it's ridiculous. So I kept going, I ended up going back up to school. And the next thing you know, I'm a junior in college. I got an early acceptance to USC Law School. Going to go to law school. I'm editor-in-chief of my college newspaper. I'm writing political inflammatory articles. They're threatening to expel me weekly. You know, I'm like having fun. My mother calls me and says, we haven't been anywhere as a family in 10 years. I'll say, it's not my fault. You know, I didn't throw you away. Right? She said, look, we'll go anywhere you want to go. We got to put the family back together. We'll go anywhere you want to go. Let's just go as a family. And I said, fine. Flew back to L.A. And on my 22nd birthday, we took off to fly to Guadalajara. And on the way there, the plane crashed. And my mother, my father, and my little sister were all killed. And I wasn't. And I woke up on this mountain in Mexico. My skull was fractured. My back was broken in 3 places. Arm crushed, leg crushed, paralyzed from the waist down. A lot of internal injuries. I was messed up, and I was awake. And my mother was laying right over there, Kimberly, my little sister, right over there, and my father was laying right over there. And I couldn't get to them. I couldn't do anything to help anybody. And they all bled to death right in front of me. And I had this little chat with God. God, you know, anybody that would take a kind, loving, gentle, poetic, beautiful little girl like my little sister Kimberly, whom I loved more than anybody on the face of this earth, because she loved me unconditionally. I knew such a thing existed because I knew Kimberly, right? She, no matter how crazy or insane it got, I was her big brother and she loved me, you know? And I could feel it. I could feel that, which was something that was always terribly hard for me to feel, that anybody loved me, because I couldn't figure out why. I just knew she did. And he took her and he left this lying, cheating, thieving, dope fiend alcoholic like me on the planet. I have no use for a God of this type, and I renounced God. And then some guys came up and they scavenged the plane wreck and took the money out of my wallet and left me up on that mountain to die. I had no more use for you anymore either. So I was out with God, I was out with you, and there ain't anybody else to play with. And I got real angry and I kept banging myself, knowing I could move my right arm, and I banged myself in the side with my right arm because it hurt so bad when I did it, it pulled me up out of the shock. The pain was keeping me alive. And that was kind of my theme for a while. You know, the pain kept me alive. That's how I knew I was alive, is because I felt the pain. And that, because I wasn't going to die up on that mountain. I was getting down off that mountain and letting y'all know how I felt about this deal called life. And some more guys came up and they got me down. They got me in the back of a flatbed truck with my mother. And she had already died, and we drove down to this place. And I remember the fleas dancing in this truck. And they tagged both of us and smoked cigarettes waiting for me to die. And didn't do it. They finally took me to a hospital. And because of some other things that had happened in Mexico, the federales showed up and they found out who I was. And they interrogated me through an interpreter for 3.5 days. They wouldn't give me anything for pain. And I finally called. They wanted to know what I was doing back in Mexico. And I just kept saying, hey, pilot error, pilot error, pilot error. And called a buddy of mine in Northern California whose family was out of Mexico City, and they flew in the company plane and paid a bunch of people and basically plastered me from the neck down and smuggled me out of Mexico. Ended up in a hospital in Santa Monica, California. Spent a long time in there. Maximum shots of Demerol every 3 hours around the clock. Strung out like a dog. Crazy. Crazy. Finally got out of that hospital wearing a brace, a cast on my leg, had a cane, here and under here. Weighed 128 pounds when they got me out of the body cast. That was crazy. I went on my last run. It lasted 4.5 years. And I was drunk every second for 4.5 years, except three occasions that were 72 hours each. And that was because I was strapped to a table for 72 hours in a little bootleg sanitarium in West Hollywood. I wasn't drinking because I couldn't get up. That's why. You know, that's the kind of place you go and you give them 150 bucks, right, cash, 50 bucks a day, 150 cash, give them your gun, your wallet, your car keys, your big ball of Valium, right, and they say, okay, let's go, and they take you in, tie you down, shoot you full of anticonvulsants, and let you ride, man. 72 hours later, they'd send you home or the morgue, and they could care less which way you went. And you'd lay there kicking like a dog, saying, get me out of this sane and alive, I'll never, ever, ever, ever drink again. I can't do this anymore. This is insane. My ass is kicked. This is bigger than me. I can't do it. I can't live like this. And I'd be drunk the night I got off the table. Drunk that night. Every time. Coming to in a different city. Wondering how it happened. I'm the guy in the book. Down on the bar. How did it happen? How did this happen? Didn't know. I knew I was an alcoholic. I was a drug addict. I'd known that for years. So what? That's what I do. That's how I live. What I don't understand is why I feel so bad. I don't get it. I don't get how this all goes together. I mean, I feel like my soul is just being sucked out of my body. Just a little tiny bit at a time. It's just like, let's just get it over. And I was just on this mad suicidal dash trying to find somebody that would kill me because I just couldn't take the pain anymore. And I came out of my last blackout, and like I said, hair out to here, 215 pounds, two busted hands, another 4-day blackout, don't remember those 4 days, dying of alcoholism, psychotic, everybody's dead, no family, no friends, no place to live, nothing left, burned to the ground, threw up my paws, and I had my moment of clarity. It wasn't a big whoop. It was just to come out of the blackout, look around, and why that day as opposed to any other, I don't know. Maybe it was because there was something inside me. The alcoholism inside me just said, you know what? We've used this one up. We need to go someplace else. It wasn't like I came up with this great idea. It's like alcoholism got done with me, and it just spit me out. And what was left was just this shell of a human being with absolutely nothing going for him at all. And I just said, help. And they took me by ambulance, and they pumped my stomach, and they just said, get him out of here. He's going to die. Just a pathetic drunk, 28 years old. And they took me to another place that kept me 3 to 5 days. I don't really know. And they said, it's getting worse. Get him out of here. And they took my ambulance to another place, Long Beach General Hospital, under the care of a lady by the name of Dr. Vicky Fox. And anybody, she's gone now. But man, what a piece of work that lady was. She knew who we were. And this place was an old Air Force barracks and 42 guys kicking in the same room with sheets between the cots. Right? You know, there was, and I mean, it was ugly. It was ugly. You know, if you got an hour sleep a night, you were lucky. Because somebody was tweaking or flipping out or going insane or throwing another seizure, just one thing right after another. You know, and you were one of them. And you belonged there and you fit in, you know. And I remember sitting in my chair just kicking like a dog. I mean, back then it was just anticonvulsants and, you know, good luck. You know, you don't want it? Leave. There's a line outside the door, man. Guys want that bed, man. Want the help. It's just how you show us you want it, is you kick. And I sit there trying not to throw a seizure. And she came walking in, man. And Dr. Fox, she had this beehive hairdo with a pencil always stuck in it and glasses on a chain and a sweater and these files under her arm and a cigarette sticking right out of the corner of her mouth. She'd light it and leave it there. You know, she didn't, none of this. She just light it and smoke it, you know. Ashes down on the sweater, you know. But, I mean, I'm telling you, if she walked through that door right now, we'd all stop and turn around and look at her. She just was one of those kind of people, you know what I mean, that just had the power. And she'd walk into that little detox thing, and she'd walk in and stop, and everybody'd just go, ah. And she looked right at me, and I thought I was going to have a heart attack. And she looked at me, and she walked over to me, and she reached down, and she put her hand on my cheek. And I looked up at her, and she looked at me, and she said, baby, you really do need to be here. And I just looked at her, and I went, yeah, yeah. That was my first direction sober. It was like talking, she's like talking to a puppy dog, just stay. I just went, yeah, okay. And I did, man. I stayed there for 12 more days of detox, 30 days of rehab, and I came out of there as crazy as I've ever been in my life. I mean, I was so nuts. I'm stone cold sober for the first time since I was 12 years old. I got no idea how to be in the world. Body's beat to hell. Thyroid's not working. Can't touch my liver. Right? Can't even stand up straight. I mean, I'm just this bent over little old man. You know? And I'm 28 years old, 215 pounds, and I'm nuts. Nuts. And I heard one thing in there. You don't want to die? You better stop drinking. You want to stop drinking? You better go to AA. I said, all right. Now, I knew nothing about AA. I didn't come here because I wanted what you had. And I had no idea what you had. I just couldn't live with what I had. And they said, come here. So I did. I came here because it was the last place to go. If there had been someplace else to go, I'd have gone. I didn't want to come here. I didn't want to hang out with you people. You were very suspicious to me. You had little slogans, you know. And y'all stay all dressed and hair combed, sitting upright and smiling. I hate that. I hate that smiling. You know, you want something. Smiling, right? Because what's to be happy about? And I came and I sat in the back of a meeting, a Friday night, basement of a church, 8:30 meeting, 8:30 to 10 o'clock. You know, I sat in the back, man, arms folded. That tough guy look on my face, right? Just mad dogging everybody. You looked at me, it was just, what? You know? I don't care, man. Because you're scaring me. And that's the truth. Because you're scaring me to death. I'm made of glass. You know, I'm not worried about you getting hurt. I'm worried about me getting hurt. I don't know what's going on. Don't ask me any questions, because I don't have the answers to anything. Don't come and say, what's happening? I don't know. What's going on? Don't know. How you doing? Don't know. Don't ask me this. Get away from me. And, of course, one every meeting's got the new guy. I just fire away with A. He saw me, and all he saw was new guy. All the old-timers would leave me alone, man. They just saw me and said, hey, there's a coffee, man. Sup, see, glad you're here. But they didn't come up on me, because they knew I was dangerous just because I was so scared. But the new guys just, ah, new guy! You know? And he's all smiling, and I'm just looking at him like, man, this guy's picking up on nothing. Because I'm looking at him like, come near me, and I'll try to kill you. Right? And he just, hey, I'm Vegas, I'm an alcoholic. And I said, so what? So what, man? Y'all are just thrilled about being alcoholics. You know? I don't know what you're so thrilled about, man. It ain't exactly the highlight of my life. You know, get away from me. And he looked at me and he did that thing you guys do that just drives me nuts to this day. He looked at me and he went, keep coming back. Hated that. And they're like three guys standing over there on the hill went, oh yeah, did you see that? He told them to keep coming back. That was great, man. Way to go, Vegas. I'm like, oh good, right? Obviously there's some deep spiritual significance to keep coming back, right? I don't know what it is, but they all seem to. You all win, I'm the loser, right? One more time, Jim, loving AA so far. I'm glad that keep coming back thing is gonna feel real good about 3 AM when I'm pacing the floor pulling my hair out. You know, nuts. Because I can't sleep one more night, you know? And I would go to these meetings, and I would go, and I would cry all the way home. I would pace. I'd get a couple hours of sleep, and I'd get up, and I'd try to get tired enough to be able to go sit in the chair at a meeting, try to hear something, and then I would go home. And I was nuts. I was nuts. And they let me be nuts, you know? And if you're new, and they come up on you, and they go, keep coming back. Or, hey, one day at a time. Or my favorite ever, hey, just turn it over. If they do that to you, just step up to the plate. Just say, excuse me. I don't understand the deep spiritual significance of keep coming back. You mind expanding on that for me a little bit? You know, and from in my neck of the woods, if they're honest, about 75% of them would say, you know, I don't know what it means either. I came in, they said it to me. You're coming in, I'm saying it to you. I don't really know it. You know, there's a guy over there that reads the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, so let's go ask him, maybe he knows. And if you do that, you'll be shocked, because if he's a student of the big book, he probably will know. Be able to answer a lot of questions for you, without giving you some fancy website spin on things, you know what I mean? Sure to be, just, I mean, tantamount to your own execution. You know, stick with the basics, man. That's what's withstood the test of time. That's what works. And if you're going to roll the dice on your life, you know, who do you want to roll them with? You know? You want to roll them with some guy who's got the new AA? Or do you want you're going to roll your dice on the guys, man, the old dogs, man, the big boys. The guys that got sober when it was not hip or fashionable to get sober. It wasn't everybody running up and down the street going, hey, I'm sober. And a bunch of people, you know, in front of the Starbucks going, isn't that wonderful? You know? Bunch of horse shit, right? I mean, these guys got sober when it was down and dirty, you know? When you were not looked upon nicely, right? I mean, they got sober because it would get sober or die, man. That's it. And they found a way where if you read the forewords, it says, it goes even further than this, but it just says this. It can just go this far. It says 75% of these guys came to no long-term sobriety. It goes even further than that, but that's right there. That's more than anything I've ever seen. 75% of them came to no long-term sobriety in a time when it was completely frowned upon, when society wasn't looking favorably upon it, where they weren't big on education, when they were looked upon as weak-willed, sniveling, whining saps. And they got sober and stayed that way. And they wrote down in a book precisely how they recovered. Now, I don't know about you, but my ass is on the line. I'm going with these guys. These are the guys I'm going with. And I didn't understand that right off the bat. I got sober going to meetings because I went in, a guy got up, shared his experience, strength, and hope, and I left my very first meeting with something I'd never had in my life. I hadn't had in my life in years. Hope. I got here hopeless. I got here with no tools at work, no idea how to do it, no idea how to be in the world, no idea. I had no sense of family, no sense of community, no sense of right and wrong, no morals, no ethics. I'd lie to you for no reason at all. And I don't know how many times the thought rolling through my head. You ask me something, I tell you, and I just lie. And then the next thing in my head was, there was absolutely no benefit to lying there, Earl. You gained nothing with the lie. You just lied. And then the next voice would just say, well, yeah. It's what we do. No, it's just strange stuff, right? And I brought all that insanity, and just plopped it down in the seat in AA. And if you just said to me, and I mean, look, my life was such, I'd love to tell you that, you know, I had a lot going on when I got here. I had nothing. If you just said to me, Earl, you got to go to a meeting every day, and they go from noon to midnight, I would have just had to say, okay. I have no conflict in my schedule there. I had no social calendar. There was nothing going on. It was just go to AA. So I went to a meeting a day. And I kept hearing stuff, and they said, you got to get a sponsor. I said, fine, I'll get a sponsor. I said, what's a sponsor? And they said, get a sponsor who's got what you want. Which, I think is another stupid thing to say to somebody like me. Because it's like, well, what I want is to drink. So I guess it's a little early to be throwing the ball back in my court. Maybe there's another way to look at this. Yep. And I've since come to believe that you go get a sponsor who's got what he wants. That he's got what he wants. If I didn't have the sponsor I have right now, I know the guy I'd ask, and he always wanted to be an auto mechanic, have his own auto repair shop. Right? Worked hard, got that, blissfully happy man. He's blissfully happy. Right? I have no desire to be an auto mechanic or have an auto repair shop. None. But what's that got to do with him? Nothing. Right? He's got what he wants. He knew how to get what he wanted. And if he can teach me how to get what I want, we're all good. So that's what I think you should go for in a sponsor. See somebody who's happy. I mean, happiness is wanting what you got, right? That was him, so that's the guy I'd go for. I mean, it's amazing the stuff that you learn in here. And I'm lucky because I never had to do that preliminary evaluation that most people have to do, where they have to sit down and go, gee, do I have the right, you know, a new topic would come up, or a new concept would be presented to me in AA. And I never had to stop and think, you know, I wonder if I've got the right information on this. It was always, no, you don't. Every single thing. We could just assume, I have no idea how to do this effectively. And we just start from zero every time. And it worked much better that way. I didn't know how to be a friend. I didn't understand the value of things. I didn't understand what motivated people to do something that would make their lives effective or happy. Right? Get the things that I was looking for. That ease and contentment that came with the first couple of drinks. How was I going to find that going to AA meetings? Because I came in here thinking, you know what, if I show you love, then you will love me. If I learn how to be honest with you, then you, of course, will be honest with me. That's the reward for that kind of behavior, right? You be trustworthy to people, then they'll be trustworthy back. Right? Absolutely wrong. It's not my experience at all. Completely wrong. I got all that wrong. What I got was, and it was just all of a sudden you look up one day and you think, oh. Right? I found out that if I show you love, if I am loving towards you, what happens is I've become a loving man. If I'm honest with you, what I get from that is that I become an honest man. If I become trustworthy, what I become is a trustworthy person. And what you do is just what you do. And for me, I got to just stop worrying about what you do. You know, people come up to me all the time and they say, "Oh, we've got a problem." I say, no, we do. You may have one. I don't have a problem. You know, and I guarantee I'm not going to take on the one you're about to point out to me. I'm not doing it. You know, you want to focus on it, you go right ahead. I don't. Because I got a sponsor, man. I got a vicious sponsor in the beginning. Not because I thought it was a good idea or I was good at picking out sponsors. I got a great, amazing, remarkable sponsor because one more time, God came down and just tapped me on the shoulder. I mean, people go back and look at my life and they think, Jesus, what a horrible, tragic, pathetic life. You know? I mean, and I understand why people think this. There's a guy back there going, yeah. It is. And, you know, and it's just, well, I'd have to say, I guess, that is one way to look at it. It is not, however, the way I look at it. And I was there for all of it. I think I have I'm one of the luckiest men on the planet. I am. I'm one of the luckiest guys that ever walked the face of this earth, as far as I'm concerned. Because I got a life beyond my wildest dreams. And all the things that I knew could never be true for a guy like me have all come true. All of them. And not because I sought them out, and not because I tried to make them come true, but because time and time and time again, God has come down and just tapped me on the shoulder. And what are you going to do with this? What are you going to do with this, Earl? What are you going to do with this? It just keeps happening. It just keeps happening. And I don't know how to explain it, but that's what happens. I thought, how can the things I've been through ever be of any value to anybody ever? I mean, a plane crash? Come on. Watch your family bleed to death in front of you? Malignant cancer, alcoholism, drug addiction. I mean, how can these things, right? Homeless. How can this have any value? Every single aspect of that along the way in my life sober has had value. When a friend calls me up and says, who has cancer and says, I'm too sick to do the Revlon walk for women's ovarian and breast cancer. Would you walk for me? And I say, because I learned how to be of service and say yes in here, I could say, sure, I'll do that for you. That sounds like a real opportunity to be of service. Not a thought that naturally occurs to me. But because I've been a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, it does. So I go and I walk. And right before the walk, they say, there's like 20,000 people there. And they say, right before they start, they go, are there any long-term cancer survivors out there? I never think of myself as that. I'm too busy being an alcoholic. You know? And I go, oh, hey, me. And they give us these little red caps that say survivor on it. And we all start off from this walk, and all these people that have got loved ones that are dying or who are gone, or people who have cancer but are strong enough to walk, are out there walking, and they spot these red caps, and they come up and they talk to you because they get hope from you. And you get to be a service. So suddenly this cancer thing had value that I could say to other people, man, keep coming, stay positive, fight, don't give up, go, go, right? And they think, yeah, you've been there, you know, yeah, I'm with you, and we go, right? And I go home all buzzed. I got this whole new way to be a service, right? And then I'm sitting in a meeting, and they say, hi, somebody says my name in the meeting, and this woman screams, right? And I think, oh, great. One more blackout, I got a face, right? Turns out, she was in a plane crash. A lot of people died. She didn't. She got messed up real bad. She'd heard about me, and she was getting sober and couldn't stay sober and getting sober. She heard about me and was staying sober, and she'd been looking for me for 2 years. And she found me. And we hooked up, and we talked, and we shared our experience. And she got to look in the eyes of another person that's been awake to the hit, you know? And we got to talk, and we got to share. And suddenly I walk away going, wow, that was of value to her, that I survived that. And every single little piece of my life has been of value to somebody else when placed to them in the right way. When understanding that it ain't about me, that my best thinking, my best ideas, I'm a dead man. I'm dead a long time ago. Or I'm living in a padded room, and they wheel me out and get me a little sun every day, bring me back in, change my diapers, and then I'm gonna rot there. That's my best thinking. That's what Earl gets done. It's all been Alcoholics Anonymous. All of it's Alcoholics Anonymous. That's all it's worked for me. I'm not a joiner. I don't join things. I was never, gee, let's be Boy Scouts. Gee, let's join the baseball team. You know what I mean? My whole attitude was, fuck you, leave me alone. Excuse my French. That's who I was, right? But I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm not one of these James Deans standing in the back, quiet angst kind of guys anymore, man. I'm willing to put my ass up on the line and say, you know what? I feel strongly about Alcoholics Anonymous. I got things I never had before, like hope. I got hope. I wake up every day and it's like, what's going to happen today, man? Because there's always something happening in my life. I mean, the people that know me know the good times aren't wasted on me. I'm a happy man. I'm a happy man. And I'll have, sober, I've had money, no money. Career going great? No career. Relationship? No relationship, right? I'm in a relationship with Lori now, right? We're really happy together. It's like no work at all. I had no idea ever that a relationship could be this easy. We just get along great. We have a great time. We're both willing to be happy, and we love each other dearly. She'll tell you, man, good times aren't wasted on me. I can be having a bad day. Somebody can say, hey, there's some fun over there. It's like, let's go. I'm willing, man. I'm embracing my life on a daily basis. I didn't know how to do that. I have good friends that I am a good friend to. And they're good friends to me. We didn't know how to be those things before we came here. I have a sense of family. I definitely have a sense of community. This is mine. You're mine. This thought may not thrill you, but you are mine. You're mine. I'm one of you. You got the same disease I do. Right? And it's an ass kicker. It's an ass kicker. So we come in here and we laugh. Right? We laugh. The healing laughter. We crack jokes. Like John was talking about, man. We talk about just the most horrific stuff. Right? And just fall over laughing sick with behind it. You know? That's what we do. And we had this wonderful time together. Because you know what? We got the chance John was talking about. We get the chance. I've been given a chance, and I ain't passing it up, man. I'm going after this thing hammer and tong. And I'm going to find my way. I've always been a pig, and I'm still one. I want the big buzz, man. Give me the big buzz. If there's a buzz to be had, I would like to know about it, please. I want it. I want it. And you're telling me that I can have that in here? Come on, man. Show me how. And you know what? You did. Because I showed up and said, I'm willing to do anything you say. I'm willing to go to any lengths. The late, great Donald Madden was my sponsor. And Donald Madden didn't play around in here, man. Donald Madden got busy. Donald Madden said, before there was a book, before there was anything else, there was one alcoholic down in the dirt sharing his experience, strength, and hope with another alcoholic so that they might rise up out of a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And you better jump in on that game, boy, or you're a dead man. You don't have to like what I tell you, and you don't have to think it's a good idea. You just have to do it, because this is the program of action. Now shut up and do what I tell you. And I just looked at him and went, yeah, baby. Yeah, Donald. I mean, this guy was lit up, man. He had a passion for living. He was fired up. And I thought, give me some of that, man. I want to feel strongly about something again. I've been walking around like a victim for years. I'm all messed up. I don't know who did this. Did you do this to me? Somebody did this to me. Probably with my daddy. But maybe the police, too. Maybe my daddy called the police. You know, I'll tell you what, I'm not a victim anymore, man. This is my life, my responsibility, and I'm going to live it. And I got tools now, man. I'm armed to the teeth. I'm armed to the teeth with Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got a big, bad buzz going, man. I get lit up all the time. And I'll tell you how I got it. Guys like Donald Madden, keeping the flame bright, man. Carrying the torch, keeping this thing alive. Not bringing me some watered-down bullshit. Because somebody said, you know, there's some words in the book that are politically incorrect. I believe it should be Father, Mother, God. You know what? You're absolutely right. There's some things that are politically incorrect in the book, you know? So what? You know, 5 years from now, something else is going to be politically incorrect. We'll probably have to change that. And then 5 years later, oh, you can't say that, and we'll change that. By the time my grandchildren get to Alcoholics Anonymous, and you know they're coming. You know? What kind of watered-down crap are they going to get handed? I don't want to hear about all this crap. Do whatever you want to do, man. Just put up, make special meetings, do this, do that. Write your own goddamn book. You know, leave the 164 and the doctor's opinion alone. Leave them alone, man. That's the heart and soul of the deal. And that's what the look, we got this triangle with this circle around it, right? This ain't nothing new. It's an ancient spiritual symbol. Mind, body, and spirit brought together as a whole human being. Therein lies the balance I have sought my entire life and never had, drunk or sober. Ever. I was as maniacal, newly sober as I was out there drinking and using. Somebody'd say, lifting weights are good. And I'd go, great, we'll lift weights. And I'd go lift weights right until I literally just ripped the muscle from the bone, you know? You know? A little surgery and that'll be fine. You know? They'd say, running's good, so I'd start running, you know? I've got 74 broken bones. You know, you don't run me around the track, right? I mean, I'm snapping it and cracking it up. Running around the track. I ran a half a marathon like that, right? Hallucinating my brains out. Right? Showing up at me, people say, how you doing? I'm having a little yogurt here. You know? Even a banana is potassium, bro. You know, it's potassium. You know, just sprung all the time, right? Alcoholics Anonymous adopted this symbol, and it's the same thing. Unity, recovery, and service, mind, body, and spirit. It's the same thing. Unity is the body. I must bring it here. I must be with my fellows. I can't catch a buzz unless I hang with you. I got to stick, get to you and stick with you. I got to be with you and keep that going. I got to look in your eyes. I got to show up at a 9 a.m. meeting knowing what the hell I'm doing there. And then Nancy gets up and talks and blows my mind. Makes me know I'm in the right place. Yeah, that's my people right there. I'm where I need to be. Then I get to go hear my hero John talk tonight. And he talks. I mean, Lori just so holds my hand and laughs at me, right? Because John starts talking and I just start crying. Because it's too real, man. It's just too close, too real. His heart to my heart. My soul being fed by his soul. He kept the way, man. He kept the path clear. He kept the light on. Those are the guys that made it possible so that when a guy like me said, please somebody help me, there'd be a place where I could go and get some help. Because of guys like him, who never strayed, man. Just stayed the course. 36 years. He had 18 years when I got sober. Right? I got to hear him talk. You don't think that fuel somebody like me? You know, the guy walked out of there all fired up. I was crazy when I walked out of there. So how you feeling? I said, alive. I feel alive. I feel like I don't have to worry about anything. I can just let it all light up. And I'm okay. Nobody's going to hurt me because I can't be hurt. Can't be hurt. I got God on my side and people like John walking the planet. I'm all right. I'm not alone. Thought I was for a long time. I got to be with you. If I had never come here, I could have never found him. God tapping me on the shoulder one more time. John's talking, get in the car. Yes, God. Right? Just those little things, right? The recoveries of the mind, the greater aspect of my disease. See, I figure, my guess is the majority of the people in this room stone cold sober. Right? So it ain't about stopping. We already did that. It's about not starting again. How do I not start again? How do I put one day next to one day next to one day next to one day and have the continuum or the path of my recovery just kind of lay right down on top of the path of my life and let them be one, let them be together? How do I do that? I got to deal with the obsession of the mind, the greater aspect of my disease, the thing that tells me I can have a couple of drinks. Book says the persistence of this illusion, this belief in a lie that we drink like normal men, it's impossible. It's astonishing. Many of us pursue it to the gates of insanity and death. That's me. I got a friend in L.A. calls me the gate guy. Give me a chance, I will go right to the gate. Sanity, death, let's go. Nothing else left to do. Let's just go there. And I don't want to do that anymore. I want to stay sober. I want to stay alive. I want to catch the buzz. Cool. How do I do it? Work the 12 steps, as outlined in the 164 pages of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what's designed to relieve me of the obsession of drink or use. Restore me to sanity, soundness of mind. Okay, so, the steps are no big mystery, man. They're real simple. They're not easy, but they're simple. Step one is, what's the problem? You got to know what the problem is you're dealing with before you can get a good solution for the problem. My problem happens to be lack of power. I'm powerless over this thing. Whole life's unmanageable as a result of this one thing, this alcoholism thing. Well, if that's the problem, what's the solution? Power greater than me is going to have to be involved here if I'm going to be restored to this thing they call sanity, soundness of mind, relieved of the obsession of drink or use. Okay. So I don't even have to get up off the couch, man. Step one. Yep, that's the problem. Yep, that's two. Yep, two. Probably going to have to be the solution because I've tried everything else. We're going to have to be a power greater than me. Says here, then I better make a decision to do something about that. All right, what do you want me to do? Well, step three. Just get down on your knees right here by the couch. Take a deep breath. Say the third step prayer. Say it like you mean it. Turn your will and your life over to the care of God. Uh-oh. All right, did it. A little nervous about that, but all right. Get back up on the couch. It says, now you better embark upon a plan of rigorous action, or the whole thing's pointless. All right, what do you want me to do? Well, you're going to have to deal with you, God, and other people. How do I do that? Well, four and five, you're going to deal with yourself. You're going to swallow large chunks of truth about yourself. You're going to do an inventory on resentment, our number one killer, like John said. Fears, sexual inventory. You want to see where people like me whack out. Those are pretty good areas to take a look at right there. All right? Having done that, read that before God to another human being at 5, 6, and 7, I hook it back up with God. Ask God to remove the defects of character because I'll remove the wrong stuff. And you remove it. You take it. Here they are. I look at it. You do what you want with it. I'm willing. I'm completely willing for you to remove this from me. Great. 8 and 9, hooking it back up with you. I'm very, very sorry. Here's your money. back in the house. No big fancy conversation. Aren't I spiritual? Let's talk about me, while we decide what we're going to do about me giving you back your money. No. Keep it simple. Deal with it. Do it. Right? 10, 11, and 12, keep me in the game. 10, me, 11, God, 12, you. Same three deals. Nothing else to do. 10, I keep my side of the street clean, and when I'm wrong, I promptly admit it. 11, I seek God. It's an action step. I seek God. How? Through prayer and meditation. What do I pray for? Knowledge of His will for me and the power to carry that out. Period. No more deals. I'm always selling myself short. No more deals. Why do I meditate? To quiet the mind so that when the answers come, I can hear them. That's why. And the third side of the triangle is the 12-step service. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, that was the whole point. To restore me to sanity, relieve me of the obsession of drink and use. I can practice these principles and carry the message. How can I help you? My relationships with other people. How can I help? Not because I'm a good guy. Because I want to stay sober. I want that big buzz. I want to feel that. My new sponsor, I did all that. Unity's a body, I bring it here. Recovery's of the mind, I work those steps. Having had the awakening, be a service. Third side. Unity, recovery, service. Mind, body, spirit. Whole person. Balance. It happens. Why does all that happen? Because I'm here to do one thing. Stay sober. I come to Alcoholics Anonymous to stay sober. They say, do these things. I do those things. All this stuff happens in my life. All of it. It's an amazing manifestation. So that I can get up in front of a room full of drunks and say, guess what? I did this thing, and this is how I'm feeling. Right? And I ought to be drooling on myself somewhere if I'm lucky enough to still be alive. I'm having a great life. I'm loving and being loved. Couldn't happen. I'm having a great, wonderful, wonderful life. And as you can see, I'm a little excited about it. Because I get all pumped up when I hear guys like John. I go, yes, man, I am on the right track. I am going in the right direction. And so when I go get that new guy, that whining, suffering, miserable, self-centered, whining little son of a bitch who's called me, I'm having a bad day. Right? All right, I'll be right over. Yeah. And I go get him to take him to a meeting because I hear that Al's talking, right? Al's my sponsor now, Al S., right? And Al's the guy that says, all you got to do is get between these. Get in there, man. Right now. Come on. Get in there. Get your life right in the middle of those. Right in there. Because if you get in there, you're right now. And there is no God anyplace else. There is no program anyplace else. There's no life anyplace else. There's nothing anywhere else. It's just now. Got enough right now? This is where God is. This is where your dignity as a man is. This is where any kind of love you're ever going to experience is. It's right now. You've got to get in there. I think, great, great, great. Al's talking. He's going to do the clapping thing we're all going to get freaked out about right now. It's going to be huge, right? And I'm going to go get little Louie, and I'm going to take Louie to the meeting, and Louie's going to just trip on this, right? And it's going to be great, right? So I go get Louie, who's got like 90 days, and I get Louie, and we go to the meeting, and Al's ripping. Right? I was just tearing it up, man. Just spiritual pearls just flying all over the room. And I'm thinking, is this cool or what, man? I could come here and do this with my sponsor, and I got a little crazy Louie here, and Louie's picking up on the pearls, and everything is good. Louie's getting this at 90 days, and it took me, Christ, 18 years to be able to really touch and base with this stuff. And I'm feeling like a part of the human chain, and this is beautiful. Well, that ain't what's happening. Louie's having a fundamentally different meeting than I'm having. And that's cool. I got to remember Louis gets to have his meeting. I got to remember what I was like when I was brand new sober and I was going to meetings and what the inside of my head looked like. Right? Because Louis looks fine. But so did I. And I wasn't fine. And neither is Louis. I remember me, 90 days, going to Ohio Street, Saturday night, young, hip, crazy, high-energy meeting. I'm going to go to a meeting. I'm actually going there by myself, right? And I would go there, and I would get there, and I would just, okay, I'm at the meeting. It's good. All right, I'm going to go in, put the key on the chair. I've got to find the chair. Put the key on the chair. Everything is sort of, that's my seat. Find the chair. Where am I going to find the chair? The guy with the red coat. And I'll be able to find the chair, find the key. Good. Can see. How you doing? I'm fine. 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 Right. So ringing a bell. We're all sitting down. Good. We're sitting down. Fine. How you doing? Good. Fine. Good job. Fine. Guy's up. He's talking. I missed that completely. I don't really hear him. That guy's talking. Now, and this guy's up. He's reading. He's reading chapter 5. Really seen something. 12 things. 12 things in A. 12 things ABC. 12 things ABC. Really. Okay, I got a lot of that. I didn't get a lot of that, but I got that. I'll read that later. I'll get it. Guy sits down. Another guy's up. He's talking. He drank. It's good. That was good. He's good. He's down. I could use a little more of that. I didn't get a lot of that. You know, so it's all right. It's all right. He's down. Another guy's up. He's talking. He's talking. The bell. We're getting up. We're going outside. We smoke. Having a smoke. How you doing? I'm fine. How you doing? I'm fine. We're ringing the bell. We're going back in. Good. Going in. I got to find my seat. Where's the guy with the red coat? Find the guy with the red coat. Right. Fine. Here we are. Good. Yeah. Fine. Right. There's a guy. He's up. He's reading 12 things. Those aren't the same 12 things. There's another 12 things. All right. We got 24 things ABC. Rarely saw something. This is all right. Us is all right. I'm getting a little bit here. It's all right. Here's another guy. He drank. I did that. I feel like that guy. I don't know how this is happening, but that guy's in my head. I understand how that guy feels. I feel that way. This is amazing. I love this. This is great. He's down. I didn't get a lot, but that was really, really good. He's another guy. He's up. Okay. We're all up. They got me by prayer. I know this prayer. All right. We'll read the prayer. Prayer. And then I would be leaving the meeting, and somebody would say, "That was a great meeting, wasn't it?" I'd say, "Yeah, it was great." And I'd get in my car and cry all the way home and pace all night, trying to get tired enough to get an hour's sleep, get up, and just do it again. That was me going to a meeting. You know what? That was a great meeting. That was a successful meeting. I assaulted no one. You know, my skull didn't just explode in the middle of the meeting as a result of the pressure I was feeling. And I was leaving there with a little hope. I was grabbing on to anything I could get my hands on. And when somebody asked me how I was doing, I told them I was fine. So when I'm sitting there listening to Al rip, listening to John rip, these guys are just laying it out. And little Louis sitting next to me telling me that meeting was just fine. You know? Then I'm thinking, Lou, total victory, bro. I don't know what happened in your head, but whatever it was cool. Because we sat there, man, and little seeds got planted. And if you're new, you've got to be here to get the seeds planted. You've got to show up. You've got to sit down. You've got to get it wrong till you get it right. There is no perfect way to do this. You just got to jump in and act like you got no place else to go. You got to go for this like there's nothing else in the world that was designed specifically for you, because there hasn't been. This is it, man. This is where the big buzz is. This goes so far past not drinking and using, you can't even believe it. You want to get to the place where you're looking out of your skull from a different angle, where you can close your eyes, breathe in, breathe out, and bam, man, hook into something you didn't even know existed. You come here, man. It's in those 12 steps. It's in it. You'll get to watch the lights come on in somebody else's eyes. You'll find out that it's guys like John and the people that came before him and the ones that'll come after him are gonna. What we do around here, man, is we raise the dead. You know, I got a whole room full of people sitting here that are dead people sitting up making sense. That's what we do. And you know what? Because it ain't us doing it. I'm just little tiny links in a big human chain that's got God all over it. That's what this is, right? And I mean, I know where I come from now. My blood family's got nothing to do with the joy and the power and the vitality and the beauty of my life. I'm a product of Donald Madden. I was with him longer than I was with my parents. I was with him until the day he died. And you know what? For a while, I even did think he was dead. Donald Madden's not dead. Donald Madden lived forever. Because I'm passing it to my boys, and my boys are passing it to theirs. And they're going to pass it to theirs. Because we keep doing that book, that big blue book. It's all right out of there. And we keep passing it on. Donald Madden's a product of Norm Alpe's, a product of Chuck Sears, a product of Bill W. Those are my boys. That's where I come from. And I get the opportunity to fly around the country, all over the place, all the time, and go meet the other tribes, you know? See what the tribe in Baton Rouge, Louisiana's doing. See what the tribe in Huntsville, Alabama's doing. See what the tribe in Canada's doing. And we gather around the campfire at night, and we exchange our personal history, which is verbal. We share our experience, our strength, and our hope together. And we have our written game plan as to how we go about doing that, which is in that big book. And we share with each other. And amazing things come to pass globally for people like us who should be dead. And we're not, man. We're more lit up than most of them. Because John touched on some stuff. We go out there and we act like normal people out there with normal people. The difference between us and them is we don't take it for granted. They do. I know, man. I pull out my wallet, man. I open it up and there's my driver's license, my picture, my address. And you drive there, I knock on that door, I'll open it. This is a spiritual experience. I got a letter from the IRS that you owe me money. I said, you know what I probably do? Not hiding from anybody. I'm not hiding from anyone. Phone rings, I can answer it. I understand what John meant about the phone ringing and just pointing at it and going, ah. I had mine hooked up. When I was new, I had mine hooked up where you never heard it ring. You never heard it ring. You didn't hear the outgoing message on the answering machine. It would just go beep and somebody would be talking. And I had a one-room apartment, so no matter where I was, I could hear it. And I can remember Donald Madden in the beginning. It's 7 o'clock in the morning. I've been asleep for an hour. I'm laying in bed. And all of a sudden I hear, beep, bed check. And it's Donald Madden. And I'm like, I went from laying on the bed to on my feet. Hour sleep, just, ah. Oh. And he goes, we're having a day out there, baby. Get out there with them. Click. And I remember thinking, oh my God. They have bed checks in AA. And it was just Donald being in my life. Donald Madden showing me the way. Me caving in the back of a meeting. Just caving in. I took the last step I could take. Sober. 2.5 years sober. Standing in the back of a meeting Saturday night on Ohio Street. Just caving in. No good. I'm never going to be. I can't do this. I don't know how this is going to happen. It's just no good. There's no way. I can't help it. There's no hope. Donald, the speaker's up talking. Donald sees me in the back. Gets up. Walks up to the front of the meeting. Walks up to the podium. Taps the speaker on the shoulder. Pushes him to the side, steps up to the microphone and says, Earl! And I'm in the back of the meeting and I just went, and I looked up and Donald's at the podium now. What the hell is going on? And he looks at me and he says, we're having a meeting. And I went, right. Okay. I'm back. And everybody else is looking around going, who the hell is Earl? I'm 2.5 years sober and I still haven't talked to anybody. I didn't say a word. I never took a chip. I didn't take a cake till I was 3 years sober. I didn't say a word in Alcoholics Anonymous till I was 2.5. I was too broken, too damaged. I was the guy in the back who would sweep up the rooms, call the sponsor on a daily basis, go to a meeting a day. I was crazy. I was crazy. I didn't know how to be with you. But Donald Madden loved me and eased me into these rooms. Got me out of the parking lot into the kitchen in the back. Got me out of the kitchen in the back into the last row. And moved me up to the meeting. Right? So at 2.5 years of sobriety, I started to raise my hand, Sam Earl, I'm an alcoholic. And my emotional freedom began. A small little baby step. I don't care what kind of shape you're in, how torn up you are. If you're here because you're an alcoholic, man, you are in the right place. You stay with us. You will be amazed how much can be dealt with here. But you gotta give it, you gotta come to us, man. You gotta let us love you. You gotta let us show you, share our experience, strength, and hope with you. And you can, if you feel like you wanna kill yourself and several other people right now, perfect. You hate being here? That's okay. You angry about having to be here? That's okay. Just come be with us. If you be alcoholic, come on. Just come on, man. Bring what you got and mix it up with us. We'll be here for you. We're going to give you your turn. You get to have your turn. You get to be new. You get to be crazy. You get to not understand. You get to be frightened. You get to believe that the things that are inside you are the things that you've done. If you tell us about those things, we'll throw you away. I'm here to tell you we won't. The time will come when you're going to share who you are, where you've been, and what's gone on in your life. And we're going to say, beautiful. Check this out. And we'll share a little bit of ours with you. You'd be amazed. These people look like they got it together sitting here. I'm here to tell you. Right? Most of the world, man, they run up to the edge of a cliff. The cliff in life. And they all go, the cliff. And they take a step back. Right? These rooms are filled with the people that run right up to the cliff and just jump, man. Don't even slow down. Just jump into the abyss. And that's how we play. And we land in jails, we land in institutions, we land in insane asylums, we land up in cemeteries, and we end up in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, sitting and fine all along. So if you knew, you come play with us, man, you're going to find out the path is very, very interesting, the party is not over, and there's a buzz available to you beyond your wildest dreams. You just come be with us. Thanks.